Hello and welcome to Unity Presbyterian Church Online. This week in worship, Pastor David challenges us to ask the question why as he looks at the story of the sacrifice of Isaac. Let's listen.
Isn't that the truth? We depend on God to be our vision, to be our wisdom in times of trouble and uncertainty. In times that we're living in right now, this is what we depend on. For God to be out in front of us and for all that we do to be following. Following the God that is sovereign and in control of all. And so may that be your prayer this week. God, be my vision and be my wisdom. Well, we are in the midst of our Lenten series where we study the story of Abraham. And I wanted to begin by sharing with you one of my very favorite stages of parenting. It was when my daughters were around the age of 2, 2.5, and they asked this one question. And they didn't ask it occasionally or every once in a while. No, this one question they asked over and over and over again. Basically, anytime I said anything, they would respond with this question. Can you guess what it is? The question of why. No matter what I said, one of my daughters would say, why? And I would have to then come up with a reason or come up with some explanation of why I said what I said. Let me give you an example. I remember one time in particular, we're outside and I'm not really thinking of anything. I just kind of make the comment, oh, it's really hot out here today. My daughter responds, why? I go, why is it hot out here? Well, because the sun is out. Thinking, see, I'm teaching her about science. I'm a good dad. She responds, why? I go, why is the sun out? Ah, because it's daytime. The sun comes out during the day. See, I'm getting this. Yeah, I'm getting used to this. Why? Why does the sun come out during the day? At this point, I'm a little bit desperate, and I say, well, because God created day and God created night, so God created all of this. See, now I'm teaching some of the faith lessons in all this. I'm feeling good about myself. But again, I bet you can expect what she says. Why? And now I'm really desperate. Why? Why did God create everything like he did? I go, I don't know. God works in mysterious ways. I need to go inside. See ya. That stage of parenting was really a fun time for me because you had to think more deeply about what your child was asking. And what I loved about it was they were like a sponge absorbing information constantly. They wanted to learn about the world, and so they were always asking that question of why in order to learn more about the world around them. I want to encourage you today, as we are studying the stories of the Old Testament, to have this same question. Feel the confidence in your own life to ask the question, why? Particularly in our story today, we're going to read one that's challenging, that's disturbing in some senses. And for you to be able to look at the Old Testament and simply say, well, why? Why is that included in our Bible? And what are we supposed to learn from it? That is going to go a long way to us understanding this story, why it was included, but also what it teaches us about God and about ourselves. So be prepared to ask the question, why, today. Now, our story begins with some really, really good news. The child that Abraham and Sarah have been waiting for so long is finally born. In Genesis chapter 21, we're told, "Now the Lord was gracious to Sarah, as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah what he had promised. Sarah became pregnant and bore a son to Abraham in his old age, at the very time God had promised him. Abraham gave the name Isaac to the son Sarah bore him." Well, this is the time where we're supposed to say, woohoo! Finally, after 25 years of waiting, now this child, this promised child of the covenant, is born to Sarah and Abraham. They give him the name Isaac. And Isaac is going to be the first of a whole generation of people that will become a new community, a new nation that will bless the entire world. What good news this is for Abraham and Sarah who have waited for so long. And that's what makes this next verse, right here in the next chapter, chapter 22, after reading just now from chapter 21, that's what makes this next verse so devastating. Our story goes on. It says, sometime later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, Abraham, he said, here I am. He said, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains that I shall show you. Okay, wait, what? This is not how the story is supposed to go. I mean, not only because Isaac is a child, and to ask a child to be killed, to be sacrificed to a god, is morally repugnant. But not only just that fact, but the fact that Abraham and Sarah have waited 25 years for this child. And now, God is coming to them saying, I want you to give me this child as a sacrifice, as a burnt offering. If this story does not affect you in a way where you say morally, this is not right, then there's a good chance that you've been reading the Bible for too long out of a Christian lens. And what I mean by that is if we read this story in any other ancient religion, we would immediately say, nope, that's not right. That's not God. But it's in our Bibles. And so we need to come again to the question my daughters asked so much around that stage of parenting. Why? Why is this in here? Why is this story found in our Bibles? Why was it kept and cherished? And why is it told generation after generation? What does this teach us about God and ourselves? Well, too often we get to a story like this in the Old Testament. Imagine that you're reading the Old Testament and you get to a story like this where it doesn't portray God in a way you're comfortable or in a way that you really understand. And so too often we simply go, I'm going to flip to, I don't know, maybe the New Testament where I understand God a little bit better and where I'm a little bit more comfortable. And we end up ignoring the stories that are very much a challenge to us. I'm going to encourage you not to do that today, because these stories were kept for a reason. They taught our early ancestors of faith something about God, and they teach us that same thing. And so today, we're going to dig into this story. Because remember, one of the guiding principles of this whole series is that the Old Testament is from a world that is very different than the world we live in today. I mean, remember, these stories that we're reading occurred 4,000 years ago in a world that is vastly different than the world you live in today. My encouragement for you the very first week of this series was to picture yourself as an explorer. You are exploring a new time period, a new culture, and that is what we must do today. In particular, today, you are going to explore how these early people of human civilization, 4,000 years ago, how they understood religion. Well, today, 4,000 years ago, humans were completely dependent on things like food and water for their survival, much like we are today. But they could not simply go to the store to get food or water if they needed it. Well, I guess that is still kind of like today, isn't it? But generally, you can go to the store and get whatever you need. 4,000 years ago, you could not do that. They couldn't go to the store, so they would need to either plant crops or go hunt an animal if they wanted food. And those crops that you planted, well, you didn't have a sprinkler system or a hose. There was no irrigation system you had to make sure your plants grew. You would depend on the clouds and rain in order for your crops to grow. If you lived in this time period, you would very quickly come to realize how unreliable something like rain really is. And about the time of your first drought, you would be searching for some way, any way, to get the rain to come back. And when the drought began withering your crops, and when your stomach began to get really hungry, and when the herds migrated away from you, you'd realize your survival depended on things that were not in your control. And out of this culture, this belief emerged that there must be some higher power or higher powers that controlled the things in the world that humans could not control. This then developed into the belief system of many gods. There must be gods for everything, controlling the things that humans cannot control. And so there's a god of rain, and there's a god of livestock, and a god of fertility, and there's God for everything. And if the gods were happy, things would go well. It would rain and nourish your crops. Your livestock would be healthy. Your family would not fall sick. But if the gods were not happy with you, then things could get desperate very quickly. It would not rain, and your crops would go into a drought. Your family might fall ill. Your livestock might die. You learned in this culture 4,000 years ago that your responsibility as a human was to keep the gods happy. If you did your job, things would go well for you. But if you didn't do your job, well, you'd learn your very survival depended on it. In this time period that Abraham lived, it was essential to keep the gods happy. So, how would you do that? How would you keep these unknown gods happy? The belief emerged that sacrifice was the way that you could please the gods and make them pleased with you. A person would provide sacrifices to their god. Say if they needed rain, they would sacrifice maybe an animal or a portion of their crops to the god of rain in hopes that it would be pleasing enough that that rain would then come. You can see where this might lead. If things were not in your control, and you were desperate enough trying to appease a distant god who you thought your very survival was dependent on, I mean, what would you do in the next major drought that came? And what if that drought lasted so long that it wiped out all of your crops and you could no longer feed your family? How far would you go to appease a god that you believed was in control of this situation? The idea of child sacrifice is appalling to us today. But what I want you to see is that in this culture and in this time period, many times, you can read from the sources of this time period, many times child sacrifice was done as a sort of desperation plea to the gods in order to bring either rain or health or fertility. In our story, in the world that Abraham lived in, where child sacrifice was not out of the ordinary, God comes to him with this request. Abraham was probably deeply disappointed, but not surprised, that God is making this request to sacrifice Isaac. What we're going to learn in this story, though, is that it teaches us something vastly different about God, how God stands out in this culture to be different from how the general belief and understanding of the gods was. Let's get into our story so you can see how. So, in chapter 3, we're told, Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him, and his son Isaac. He cut the wood for the burnt offering, and set out and went to the place in the distance that God had shown him. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place far away. Then Abraham said to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey. The boy and I will go over there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you. This verse is a really good example of why it is so important to read the Bible carefully. If you do not read the Bible carefully, you never know what you're going to miss. Like, did you notice that at the end of this passage, Abraham is telling the two men that he came with, his servants, he said, stay here, Isaac and I are going to go worship, and then we will come back to you. Well, you would think that Abraham is going to say, we're going to go worship, and then I'm going to come back to you because we're sacrificing Isaac, right? That's what you'd think Abraham would say, but he doesn't say that. He tells the two men, stay here, we will come back to you. Why does Abraham use the plural there of we? Well, there's two options. One is that Abraham is just blatantly lying to his men. Perhaps he's trying to save face because they have a suspicion of what he's going to do. Or the other option, and the one that I think is more likely, is that Abraham had some sense that God was doing something behind the scenes here. That he believed that God was at work in some way that he wasn't completely clear what yet. But that Abraham had a belief that God was going to provide a way out. That God would not make him go through with this sacrifice of Isaac. It's almost as if the narrator of this story is giving a wink to the audience, saying, look, Abraham knows that more is going on here than meets the eye. And so Abraham tells them, we're going to go worship, and then we will come back to you. So he travels on with his son. And in verse 6, it says, Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on his son Isaac. And he himself carried the fire and the knife. So the two of them walked on together. Isaac said to his father, Abraham, Father. And he said, here I am, my son. He said, the fire and the wood are here, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? What a question that Abraham has to answer his son. His son looks him in the eyes and says, where's the lamb? Where's the lamb? Because I see the fire, I see the knife, I see the wood. Where's the lamb for the burnt offering? We readers know that Isaac is meant to be that offering. How does Abraham respond to his son's question? Well, the way he responds gives us a good idea of his own understanding of God, because here's what he says. Abraham said, God himself will provide the lamb for a burnt offering, my son. So the two of them walked on together. Is this another possible reference to Abraham understanding that more is going on than meets the eye? Can he can say with confidence that God is going to provide a lamb. God is going to provide something that's going to take the place of his son Isaac. I mean, contrary to the mounting evidence that he has before him, Abraham has faith that the God he worships is going to come through for him and his son Isaac. This sort of faith that Abraham is displaying right here, right now, it's pretty incredible. The story goes on. It says, when they came to the place that God had shown him, Abraham built an altar there and laid the wood in order. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to kill his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here I am. He said, do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. And Abraham looked up and saw a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. Now remember the question that my daughters used to love to ask, the question of why? why is this story in the Bible? Why is this story kept, and what are we supposed to learn from it? Well, before we begin by coming up with our own explanations and ideas of what this story meant, first, we should look at what Abraham learned from this story. How did this story impact Abraham's faith and his idea of God? We're told that Abraham was so moved by what happened here that he renamed the place that this all took place. It says, so Abraham called that place, "The Lord will provide." As it is said to this day, on the mount of the Lord, it shall be provided. Yes, Abraham has learned something about the God that he worships. And this is the main reason that this story has been told over and over and over again. This is the reason why this has been shared with each new generation, both of Jews and also of Christians. The reason why we share it in our Bibles today is because this story teaches us that we worship a God that provides and not a God that needs to be appeased. In this way, God stands out in stark contrast to the general idea of God and religion in his day. Because remember, in his day, it was thought that you had to appease the gods. You had to make them happy. Otherwise, life would not go well for you. And you could get so desperate, you could go so far in trying to make the gods happy, in appeasing them, that you could even offer up a child. This story is told so often in the lineage of Abraham and his descendants because from that day forward, they never, ever offered a child as a sacrifice. Even though the culture around them was doing that, Abraham understood firmly that God was saying, no, this is not the type of God I am, and this is not the type of people you will be. They stood out from all of the culture around them because of this story and what God was teaching them. Ultimately, this is a story about God and God's character being revealed. We are learning from this story that God is a God that provides, not a God that you need to walk on eggshells around because you do not want to disappoint or make upset in some way. So I don't know what your faith background is, but I know that for a lot of us, at some point in our kind of learning about God, that we've placed God in a role of demander, where God demands things in our life. And even subconsciously, perhaps we have thought that we need to appease God and make God happy with us. Perhaps you were raised in a religion where you were afraid to mess up because you thought that God would be upset with you and might hold it against you. Perhaps we still think we need to appease God in some way through our thoughts or our behaviors or our actions. In light of this story, I encourage you to put God in the role of provider and not the role of demander. God, as provider, creates a religion where we're excited to work with God to create a better you and a better world around you. That's what God is providing, where your behavior, your thoughts, your actions, all of these are offered up to God as a free will offering to him in response to God's grace and love. During the time of the prophets, so several hundred years later, they were so profoundly shaped by this story of Abraham that they are continuing to try to share how this impacted them and changed their culture by thinking about who God is. I want to show you a section from Hosea, from chapter 6, where they're talking about God as provider. Hosea says, "For I desire steadfast love and not sacrifice, the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings." You can see that the story of Abraham and Isaac is a big step in the direction of understanding this as a God of love and not a God who demands sacrifice. Yes, God is using this story from the very beginnings of our Bible, from the first book in the Bible, to begin to move his people into a proper relationship with him. It's a relationship that's based on love and not fear. This is important because it affects how we view and understand God. I can remember a time when I was a child, and every night before bed, I would pray for God to forgive my sins, which in and of itself is probably a good thing to do. But the reason I did it is because I was afraid that if something happened to me during the night, and if I forgot to ask God to forgive my sins, then maybe I would end up in hell or separate from God in some way. It was based on fear and this need, even at a young age, having a conception of God that needs to be appeased in some way. God teaches us through this story that God doesn't need magic words to make him happy. God wants your heart. God wants an authentic and right relationship with you that is based on grace and love. Hundreds of years later, the author of Hebrews wrote about how Abraham displayed faith in this type of God. Here's what he writes. He says, "By faith, Abraham, when put to the test, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was ready to offer up his only son, whom he had been told, 'It is through Isaac that descendants shall be named for you.' He considered the fact that God is able even to raise someone from the dead. And in a sense, Abraham did receive his son back from the dead." You see, Abraham did not believe that God was actually going to demand the sacrifice of his son Isaac. And yet, Abraham had the type of faith in God where he realized God is doing something in this story, something that's going to teach me about his character, and that story will be used then for generations to teach people about God's character. Abraham understood that God was doing something below the surface in this story. And so Abraham put his faith in God to say, "God, I will follow you even though I'm not really understanding what that means. Because I have faith that, God, you can even raise the dead. That is how powerful you are." And what Abraham learned from that story, the why of that story, is what we still learn today. That we worship a God who provides, not a God that demands and needs to be appeased. May your idea and conception of God be framed around a God that loves you, that today wants a relationship with you, so that you can freely give all of yourself and all of your heart to this wonderful God that we worship. Amen.
If you would like more information about Unity Presbyterian Church, please visit our website at www.unitypres.org or visit us on Facebook. This is the Unity Presbyterian Church Podcast. Have a great week.